Well, welcome. My purpose this afternoon is to give you a brief rundown on the WACTP scheme, provide an update on some of the issues and trends that we are currently facing, and then touch upon a new initiative that will take effect from 1 July 2016 in the shape of a no-fault lifetime care and support scheme for people catastrophically injured. So there, over there is an overview of some of the material I'll cover this afternoon. Some of those will be very brief. Our scheme is still purely a common law scheme. Nothing much has changed. It will do so next year, but in the context of some of the issues and challenges facing some of the schemes in other Australian jurisdictions that we've heard about so far, ours is, relatively speaking, a boring one. So in terms of an organisational overview, the Insurance Commission of... WA, in its various shapes and forms, has been around for a long, long time. It's a government-owned trading enterprise. It administers government self-insurance arrangements and, of course, the WACTP scheme, which I have the privilege, I suppose, of managing. Sole underwriter and approximately 2.7 million vehicles on the vehicle register. Purely a common law scheme. A few restrictions in place. There are restrictions in relation to a capping on general damages, a threshold of currently indexed at $20,000, and just a restriction on claims for economic loss, restricted to three times average weekly earnings. But beyond that, it's an unlimited common law scheme. So, some of the key financial features of the CTP scheme. Just one point to note, the provisions for outstanding claims includes a prudential margin, and overall, certainly a pretty financially sound scheme, and has been so for quite some time. Claims experience. One of the key features of our scheme, I guess, is a reducing trend in claim frequency. Our actuary assures us that over the last, 17 or 18 years, the claim frequency has actually reduced by approximately 67%. And present indications are that that trend is continuing. Currently, we have approximately just under 6,000 active claims under management. Approximately 375 of those comprise catastrophic injury claims. So that'd be the sort of claims where you're looking at lifelong care and support needs. On average, we settle about just under 3,500 claims a year. Most of those claims, about two-thirds of those claims, are settled through the litigation process. So there's legal proceedings afoot, and they are settled at our conferences and informal conferences. Whilst it still is a full common law scheme, only approximately about 1% of our claims proceed to litigation. We generally manage and settle those claims through informal means or through the formal pretrial conference. But other than that, the only thing I did say is that certainly in terms of claims cost, and I'll have a slide that touches upon that in a moment, but certainly we have been able to keep the average claims costs under control, the only exception being large loss claims. Generally, large loss claims we define as claims in excess of $1 million or involving catastrophic injury. The trend in relation to those has only been different from the main cohort, both in terms of frequency and I think in terms of costs. So in terms of a claims experience, I think the point about the continuing claim frequency is certainly very visible there. The graph only goes back to 10 years or 11 years or so, but it is in effect, if you extrapolate that back to the early 2000 and beyond, it certainly is a much steeper decline. It has levelled out. The rate of decline has probably levelled out even more lately, but certainly continues at the downward trend, which is very pleasing. There has certainly been substantial growth in WA in terms of population growth over the last recent years. That has resulted in more vehicles on the road. Interestingly, the number of crashes being reported is pretty steady, hasn't varied greatly year to year, an average about 14,000 per annum, but the number of claims resulting from those has certainly continued to reduce. Now, what that might be driven by is subject to much debate. Personally, I believe it's probably a combination of factors. I think the good economic conditions in WA, until recently anyway, probably account for some of it in the shape of a much newer vehicle fleet overall. I think the increased focus on road safety that certainly the WA government has implemented or maintained over the last few years has helped. I think probably some people have suggested the traffic congestion has probably got a lot to do with it. The average speed on a freeway between 5 and 7 p.m. on a weekday is at about 35 kilometres an hour. So it's probably got some merit. long way continues from a scheme management perspective. In terms of the fund, again, a very solvent fund, financially stable, currently looking at 142% solvency. Now, solvency here, we're talking straight assets over liabilities. No more complex than that. But there is built into that solvency margin, a prudential margin as well. So, and that is all being achieved through a reasonable, and I say that it is very reasonable, premium regime. There are a number of years where the premiums have not increased, but of lately they've just moved up. There was a big 10% decrease in 06, 07. And then, of course, the global financial crisis in 07 or 08 or 09 and beyond sort of drove up further increases. But overall, well below inflation in WA. And that, I think, is reflected in the average, the cost of a family car compared to, you know, comparatively to the rest of Australia, where we are currently the cheapest. And there still is, notwithstanding where it is at the moment, there is still probably a surplus margin within that premium based upon most recent scheme data. Claims payments, no different than the experience elsewhere, I guess, certainly has continued to increase the average cost of claims. The cost is actually driven mostly through care costs. You know, the medical costs and so forth. If you separate the large loss claims from the analysis, the actual average cost of claims has pretty much been in line with inflation. But if you look at the involvement or the costs associated with large loss claims, in particular care, attendant care, nursing care and such like, they've certainly been rising at slightly higher than the rate of inflation. But overall, if you take an overall scheme perspective, the level of superimposed inflation within the scheme is pretty close to zero. If you segment down to the claims population and you look at perhaps the split of large loss claims as a proportion of the overall claims cohort, then there's probably an element of superimposed inflation by large loss claim being more highly represented. We do have a lot of country accidents in WA that sort of drive the large claims. Most of our severe injuries seem to arise from country accidents, single vehicle accidents in the country. Certainly as a proportion of overall catastrophic claims and as relative to the number of accidents or serious accidents that occur in the metropolitan area, the country areas are certainly much, much better represented, if you could use better as a term. So overall, in terms of the CTP scheme, it's travelling along pretty much as usual. We do obviously have some of the issues that our jurisdictions seem to have, but given in mind that it still is a common law scheme, it's so far so good. But things will change from 1 July 2016. Government decided to implement a no-fault lifetime care and support scheme, pretty much initiatives that have been implemented elsewhere in Australia, New South Wales, of course, Australia and ACT most recently. $99 is the premium estimated that is required to fund the new initiative. That $99 is a premium including GST and insurance duty. So it will make the total cost of CTP close to the $400 mark. So the $250 will probably become $300 or $400. We'll still retain the premium, it's very affordable. The costs, of course, being a common law scheme, not having had any visibility of people that cannot pursue a claim, we've had very little history to go on. We have used our scheme experience in the context of the care and support component for common law claims as a basis to estimate the cost of future claims. And at the moment, looking at about $4 million per person. That's an average cost. It is based upon a common law scheme. There are some numbers or some elements in that are slightly inflated by nature of being common law. But in the main, it's where we're going to end up with, given if one looks at the experience over the last, in the scheme over the last 20 years or so. The estimates is that we will look at perhaps doubling the number of catastrophic injury claims per year. We presently look at about 48 to 50 per annum that are compensable and that are already looked after within the current CTP scheme. An additional 44 are estimated to be not compensable and will qualify for benefits come July the 1st next year. There will be a slight variations on the theme compared to what has been implemented elsewhere, is that in that we are looking at retaining the element of choice in WA, so the people that can establish fault will be able to opt to have a lump sum, as they do now, or remain in the scheme and get the care and support paid as you go for as long as they need it. That choice will only apply to people that can establish fault. In other words, the 48 people compensable in the current scheme, the 44 that are currently not compensable and not currently in the scheme will not have the choice of a lump sum component or commutation. The scheme will be based upon the nationally agreed benchmark, so it'll cover the same type of injuries and to the same scope as elsewhere. And it will also provide for the same extent of benefits as are provided elsewhere. These are minimum benchmarks. Other jurisdictions may provide higher than that, but certainly in WA the minimum will be consistent with those. Now, in terms of looking at perhaps how we see the brave new world, if you take the circle as comprising all of the people injured in motor vehicle accidents, on the left-hand side, you have the current ones that can establish fault, and we're talking about the catastrophic injured cohorts here, of course. The ones on the right are the 48 that can establish fault, so they remain in the scheme and will have access to the same benefits and ambulance support as they've had so far. They will additionally have the option of choosing to either take the lump sum as they have historically or remain in the scheme. The ones, the upper quadrant on the right-hand side is the 44 that we currently don't have but will have from 1 July next year. And, of course, the lower right-hand side quadrant there is the remainder of people injured in motor vehicle accidents in WA that cannot establish fault but are not catastrophically injured. They will continue as they have so far. But in terms of the organisation's capacity, what is so far, we are managing a common law scheme where there's involvement from lawyers and so forth in managing and claims. Going forward in the brave new world, we will actually have to develop an internal capacity and capability of managing long-tail claims, lifetime care and support, because one of the main aims the government wants to achieve is a consistent level of care and support for those most in need, i.e. the people most injured, seriously injured. So there's certainly going to be substantial upskilling that we require to do, as well as putting together the new scheme. So where are we at the moment? Well, you can imagine, given that it's got to be taking effect from 1 July next year, which is barely 7 months away or thereabouts, we are busily drafting the new legislation. It is envisaged that legislation will be tabled in Parliament early in the new year. We are obviously rebuilding or modifying our premium collection and providing for the new premium, the new forms that will have to go with it. A lot of work with the Department of Transport, who's our agent in issuing policy and collecting premiums. And then, of course, we have the big job internally of gearing up to actually fulfil the new brief that we have, and that includes systems, processes and the skill sets that we don't have yet but we'll need to acquire and have on board by 1 July next year. So whilst the CTP scheme on the one hand is ticking along quite nicely, there's quite a lot of work and a few stressed people in WA at the moment gearing up to provide for the new scheme. So on that, I will hand over to Neil.
That's fab. So Neil's going to present next on Queensland CTP. Neil is the Insurance Commissioner at the Motor Accident Insurance Commission and is responsible for the regulation and strategic leadership of the Queensland Compulsory Third Party Scheme in accordance with the Act 1994. So prior to joining MACE in 2010, Neil has over 30 years of experience across a broad range of management and executive roles, with particular emphasis delivering superior profit outcomes in personal injury insurance. So it's just forwards and backwards.
Thanks, Vivian. Good afternoon. Just a couple of slides from our annual report, give you a quick overview of the scheme. Over the last 12 months, quite a positive story in Queensland. Premiums came down. We focused on Class 1 and Class 6, make up about 80-85% of all vehicles in Queensland. And the taxi premium has been particular positive for us. We've been working with the Taxi Council on some initiatives to improve their scheme experience. So to see premiums actually reduce in a year, I think it's a very positive outcome for all stakeholders. Also focused on efficiency both within MACE and within the Department of Transport. So we saw levies reduce across MACE, the nominal defendant, and Department of Transport. I think the nominal defendant levy reduced. That's only the second time in its 50-something year history. So for Kylie Horton and for the nominal defendant management team, a fantastic result, recognised in a better outcome for motorists. Vehicle population grew 3.3%, so pretty much on trend. The scheme delivery review is something we started doing a few years back, just to have a look at where the money goes in terms of the premium dollar that motorists pay. We don't have an efficiency measure as such within the scheme. So if you look at this and it's a sea of numbers, looking over the last 5 years, what proportion of money is expected to go to the claimant? On this graph, 58%. This assumes for outstanding claims, there's a 2.5% superimposed inflation allowance on those outstanding numbers through to finalisation. So obviously if currently the scheme's running at closer to 0% superimposed, if that came out that way, the 58% would go down, the total delivery cost of 41% would go up, and that would be a much higher insurer profit than you're seeing on these slides. One of the things we did in looking at this table is really comparing from year to year rather than looking at a static set of numbers, just to see what the trend is. And the movement from last year to this year, we have seen that sort of shift with less money going towards claim cost, more money staying in the delivery space. the history of the scheme, we've seen a sort of general downward trend in claim frequency. It bobbles around a little bit, but trends down overall. This line takes you out to 2014, so the most recent year is still a bit immature. Early experience appears to be that frequency is up on what we would like to see in terms of that downward trend, probably up 8 to 10% maybe. So we'll have a look at what's causing that as to why we're seeing more claims come into the system. And I think Andrew Nichols has canvassed already elsewhere that New South Wales is seeing some claim farming and other sort of practices that might be driving some claim numbers. We're aware claim farmers did move into Queensland a while ago. We were hoping that we would be able to push them out. Hard to know at this stage whether this is to do with road crash issues or we're seeing more people attracted into the scheme by legal advertising or legal activity. In terms of average claim cost, the last couple of years, we've seen an actual reduction in average claim size. So a very pleasing trend, principally by seeing a lower amount being paid out in economic loss and predominantly in future economic loss amounts. On the right is severity one, injury severity one, so typically the more minor claims. Next slide goes into some of the other segments. We're seeing this trend both in terms of the overall scheme, but also across all of our insurers. So there seems to be a pattern here that it's not just one insurer driving down costs while the others aren't getting the same experience. There are certainly some timing issues around how insurers are sort of seeing this come through, but from a scheme perspective overall, a very positive reduction in claim size. And then severity 2 and severity 3 plus, a similar trend over the last couple of years. One of the things that I would like to think that we can attribute this to, there's obviously many things go on behind this, is the conversation that go on between insurers and between MACE and the insurers about the claims environment. We go out every 6 months, talk to insurers about, from a benchmarking perspective, how they're travelling against the other insurers, and then also just sort of general experience in the scheme. And one of the things we've noticed from those conversations is as you start to talk about something, if an insurer senses that they're perhaps sort of falling behind their peers, you certainly see a lift or a change between that and the next 6 months' experience. So I think this is about having the right conversations as well as having conversations in the first place. One of the things we're currently really focused on is return to work. It's a tricky metric in a CTP scheme where there is no compunction on any party around return to work. But it's obviously a positive outcome for the injured person and all things held equal should relate to a better or lower economic loss payment. So an important outcome, even though it's not a metric that's captured explicitly in the scheme. But those sorts of conversations, I think, do drive a focus and I'm hoping we will see this sustained. But all of the insurers are certainly focused on this. So in terms of what all of that translates to in terms of premium, premiums have been quite flat in Queensland for some time. In April, Suncorp surprised us by dropping their price by $13 below the ceiling, the first time we'd seen a price drop, and particularly one of that magnitude, for quite some time. Two quarters later, they're back at the ceiling. So it was a short-lived little conversation. And nobody else moved their price. And I think we got a lot of questions about why did Suncorp drop their price. The positive for me is that even though they came back to the ceiling, what was emphasised out of it all is there is a lot of competition going on in our scheme away from headline price. So we see a lot of incentives and other offers that come along to both attract and retain customers. So even though we may not be seeing too much headline price competition, it is still a very live and healthy scheme. And I think this slide perhaps typifies some of that. Suncorp market share over the last 2 years has stayed around about 49%. In July 2013, we saw the start of the exit of NRMA from our scheme. So their 5% market share was reassigned to other insurers. That's all now cleared. We've landed with the new market shares. So we've seen QBE, Allianz, RACQ shares lift to a different sort of level, but whether they've absorbed that 5% or some went to Suncorp and other business moved away, we can't track that level of dynamic. But certainly at the end of September, that's the new sort of market share sort of split for us. So in terms of looking forward, what are we doing with the scheme? Mace has probably spent a lot of time working with Department of Transport and with Queensland Police, really trying to get ourselves established in the road safety agenda and be seen as a credible partner in that conversation. I think it's been a sort of slow, patient conversation rather than one where we've sort of suddenly arrived. But both of those lead agencies now see us as a really credible partner in terms of the relevance to the CTP scheme, the relevance to motorists, but also the data we hold and the information we have around road crash. So we now have regular forums. We've recently launched a road trauma mitigation fund where we've put MACE money into a fund working with police and transport on ways to reduce incidents of road trauma. In looking at the scheme efficiency overall, we've been doing some work with QUT and their process mining capabilities, trying to understand how we can improve the claim process, as well as investing in a number of research and other initiatives with the health system, particularly focused on traumatic brain injury and spinal cord injury. One final piece that we've just started looking at, people talk about disruption, digital economy, the digital future. We're interested in understanding what that looks like for a CTP scheme. So whether it's driverless cars, whether it's improvements in medical science, just what might that look like over the, sort of a number of horizons, and then what research might we need to do to understand what we need to do to be ready for that and to enable it. Back in 2010, MACE joined the, I think, a broader sort of focus on reducing the incidence of road trauma. The United Nations Decade of Action was launched, a goal of reducing the incidence of serious injury and fatalities on roads worldwide by 30%. We took that up into a Queensland CTP context and said if by 2020 we can reduce claim frequency by 30%, so in rough numbers from 0.2 down to 0.14 per 1,000 vehicle, we could save 60,000 people from having to put in a CTP claim because they weren't being injured on roads. You can then multiply that out by the number of at-fault claims who would also potentially be saved. So a big focus for us and one that's really galvanised us around what we can do to help reduce road trauma, to reduce the frequency of claims. So obviously clear benefit to people not being injured, but also to a reduction in CTP premium for all motorists. The work we're doing with QUT around driverless cars, the shape of travel to come, I think, and we're in South Australia, on the weekend they had the XC90 driving around on a stretch of road. I think one of the things that Department of Transport said to us is everyone knew this was coming. What they didn't realise is the pace of change. The technology is coming faster than regulators can be ready for it. We're focused not just on the car but on the road system. So how do you build a road? How do you police for driverless cars that in theory will never crash? So the implications are sort of quite significant across the board. As I say, that's also looking at the medical science and the delivery of insurance, a claim system that's completely paperless. All of these things can be done. We just need to put our minds to how we invest in enabling them and doing the research to really work out what is the way forward. I mentioned the QUT stuff a little while ago. One of the interesting bits of feedback we got from insurers was they were very concerned that by divulging what they saw as their own competitive advantage in the way they manage claims, they would be doing themselves a disservice, that we would take what the insurers were doing well and then share that across the industry and destroy that advantage. I guess when you look at things like average claim size and you see that across the insurers, and you sort of go, well, we're not really seeing a marked difference that would suggest one has an advantage over the others. Why don't you want to share your information? And I heard somebody in an earlier session talk about one bad insurer can set one bad precedent that can affect a scheme for every other participant in the scheme. Isn't it in your interest that everyone be best practice? I guess we'll keep having that conversation. I'm not sure if we'll ever sort of break through in terms of insurers being, you know, sort of willing to share fully. But one of the things we do want to look at, the Queensland government has an open data policy. MACE puts up data into the open data system on a regular basis. It's probably not in the most useful form. But whether we should take a more open source approach to saying, here is the complete data set, here is quite a granular level of detail, and let all the smart people, not just actuaries, but all the smart people, have a look at that data set, see if you can help us solve some problems of what's going on in our scheme. Would that be a bad outcome for the key scheme participants? One of the final things for us is looking at the return to work focus. So how do you measure return to work and return to health or health outcome in a common law scheme, which heavily focuses on average claim size, finalisation rates? Capturing a qualitative measure in a quantitative scheme is very tricky. And I think it's using the sort of analytics and using the insights that will help us get there. MACE and the nominal defendant are rebranding. This has probably been a long time coming for a lot of people at MACE, but these are the new logos. I think it's a timely refresh for us. We'll be able to get out there with a new image. It will be updated on our websites and other sort of paraphernalia that we put out. But I think there's a lot of sort of morale boost around it. Might mean nothing to a lot of other people, but it's good for us. And I'm glad I get to go last, because my last slide. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Neil. So we'll open it to the floor for questions now. Can I ask if you can also go to the mic in the middle of the room? Thank you.
I've got an actuarial question to have. With the catastrophic scheme, the ability to elect for a lump sum, what happens to those that are partially at fault? That's the first question. And secondly, with the election to go for a lump sum, I'd just be curious to know what the discount rate would be, because that may well be higher than the gap, the inflation discount gap that you'd have to reserve at, and whether there would be a financial incentive for the regulator to encourage people to go for lump sum because it's cheaper on the scheme.
Well, on the first question, contributory negligence would not be an issue in relation to payment for care and support. So if someone is catastrophically injured, can you all hear me? Or?
Yep. All right. Magic, it works. On the issue of contributory negligence, for people that are catastrophically injured, any contributory negligence deduction will not be made to payments for care and support. So,
any negligence for the lump sum conversion?
Correct.
Okay.
It will still, contributory negligence will still apply to claims for pain and suffering, economic loss and such like, but not for care and support payments in context of those benchmarks. As for the discount, the whole issue of the lump sum is to retain the system that currently exists. Because in the context of the scheme, the way it is travelling and the way the people are being currently compensated, there was no imperative to actually change it. So whatever currently exists will continue to exist, except that people will have a choice if they either choose to stay and get payment as you go or do what they do now and take their lump sum.
Anyone else?
Sorry, I've got two questions as well. Must be in the water. So they're for each. So Neil, Has there been any push from the government or anyone else to try and introduce a lifetime care scheme in Queensland? Is the first question. And the second question is for Fab. In terms of the introduction of the new scheme, from what I understand, you're going to start charging motorists from 1 July, but the benefits will start applying straight away. So theoretically, there's an unfunded liability. How will you deal with that? This is my second question. Now I'll run away.
Mace is giving government policy advice on a national injury insurance scheme. We've been saying that for about 10 years now, before the Productivity Commission perhaps came along. In May 2013, the then Queensland government did sign a heads of agreement with the Commonwealth that said if Queensland doesn't have a NIS in place for motor vehicle accident, it will be financially liable for the cost of people who enter the NDIS. So in some shape or form, Queensland will have a NIS. It's just whether it's a scheme called NIS or whether it's a financial impost somewhere in the background being paid for where NDIA, in fact, cover the people and the Queensland government reimburses the Commonwealth. That's 1 July 16, so we've still got 7 months of water to flow under that bridge. We'll see what happens.
You're quite correct. There will be an element of underfunding in relation to the scheme kicking off at the same time as the premium collections, and that's an issue that government will have to deal with as to whether alternative funding sources or some other means of doing it.
So does that mean at the moment it just comes out of the funded status of the scheme, the funded liabilities of the scheme? It'll just...
No, the two funds will be kept separate, so there'll be no cross-subsidisation from the CTP scheme. Unless government decides so, of course.
Anyone else? I think we've got time for one more question. Well, I might ask one for Fab about ICWA. With the common law nature of the scheme, have you seen any issues around increasing legal representation of claims or the impact that's seen by some of the privately underwritten schemes?
Funny you should ask that. Of late, and when I say late, look, probably the last 6 months, we've sort of noticed a trend developing in our jurisdiction that Queensland and New South Wales have been dealing with for a while, and that is the issue of claims farming. But what we're getting is actually New South Wales-based firms call centres calling people in WA, and then New South Wales law firm representing successful hits, I suppose. We have received, I think it's about 35 claims over the last 3 months, and it's an issue that we currently have raised with our legal practice tribunal over there. It's a trend. What we don't know, and it's a mystery, and if someone does have the answers, I'd certainly be very grateful. What we don't know is where they actually get their data from or their names from. As we understand it, they're simply calling people out of the blue, but they seem to have quite accurate details about crashes and dates and locations and so forth. It's a very interesting issue.
Worrying issue. All right, thank you. Very quickly.
I don't know how true it is, but there are some industries that are unregulated and they have access to accident information. So we've heard exactly the same thing, but it's the unregulated service providers who maybe potentially arrive at the scene of the accident, but I can't verify that.
Cool. Can you join me in thanking Neil and Fab for their presentation today?